strip was brought to you by our good friends down the hall here at the Bitcoin Commons in Austin, Texas, Unchained. Unchained is here building the financial platform of the Bitcoin standard the right way. They do everything leveraging Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. They have their vault, which is a 2 or 3 multi-sig where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. So you can take sovereignty over your Bitcoin, but also have a collaborative partner if you ever need someone there to sign a transaction beside you. On top of that, they have their lending desk that you can use Bitcoin as collateral to get out a US dollar loan. That also leverages a 2 or 3 multi-sig escrow account where you hold 1 key, so you have visibility, knowing that your Bitcoin's not being rehypothecated and that you're going to get it back after you pay back the loan. They have a trading desk, so you can buy Bitcoin and send it straight to cold storage. And they also have an IRA product, which allows you to hold your own keys. You can transition your IRA into Bitcoin and hold your own keys. It's the best way to hold Bitcoin in an IRA. And they've really streamlined that process. They launched a new onboarding process a couple of weeks ago. And so now if you want to transition your IRA into Bitcoin using Unchained's IRA product, it's much easier to do that. So go check them out. Hit up their consultation team. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Tell them the TFTC sent you. Excuse me. Tell them that RHR sent you, because this is RHR, not TFTC. I get them mixed up every once in a while. Go check them out. Unchained.com/consultation. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They built this thing right next to me, the Block Lock. They build the best Bitcoin hardware in the space, whether it's security hardware, like their cold card, their Q1, which is making a lot of progress, or their SATS cards and tap signers. If you're securing your Bitcoin and you want to put it in cold storage and have peace of mind knowing that you're using the best hardware on the market, make sure you're using CoinKite products, whether it's their MK4, again, the Q1 that'll be released in the future, SATS card, tap signer, get a Block Lock, check out the Open Dime. They've been around for over 10 years. They've been iterating on these products. So if you're looking for a Bitcoin-only dedicated hardware device, go check out CoinKite's products, Cold Card MK4, best on the market right now. Go to CoinKite.com. Try the code RHR. I still don't know if it works, but just try whatever. Just plug in some stuff. Enjoy this rip. Tiki.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Party rip.
Hey, everybody.
Ooh. We've got five people here, four of which are from Austin. One is stuck in Nashville.
Yeah.
You're stuck in here with me.
All right, Rorschach.
How's it been this week? Let's start there.
Body, Nashville, you're missed. Vivek was here yesterday.
2 days
don't
ago.
Call that. 2 days ago. Don't call that. On principle, look, so he introduced himself as Vivek to all of us.
It's a fucking psyop, right?
Yeah. Well, like, look, it's like now he's Vivek. No, you can't do that. You can't. No,
I could do whatever I want.
Are you trying to go by?
I say I'm Vivek. I say I'm one, Vivek. You know, I have some black friends that call me Vivek. First days of school is Vivek. Clubhouse been going by Vic because they just can't get it right at all.
Next, no, he's going to be like, it's pronounced right. Camilla.
Not about getting it right. You introduced yourself as Vivek. We have a whole friendship built on it. Yeah. And you can't just, like, a presidential candidate comes out of the woodwork and then all of a sudden, like, oh, I'm pronouncing your name wrong. It's just
it's for OPSEC, bro. Because, like, you're like, oh, I don't know the Vivek at CoinKite, but I know this Vivek at Blockstream. And I knew this other guy from, like, the Bay Area way back called Vivek.
There was another dude, like, grilled salmon or something like that.
I'm going to say, Vivek, I feel like I don't know you at all anymore.
I'm a shapeshifter.
I thought you were Vic for the longest time, just Vic.
Yeah, Vic too, exactly, yeah.
Or V. People call you V.
People call me V too.
Yeah.
Anyway, this last week at the park has been great. It's still going. It's been nonstop. First, we had our Bit Devs. Then we had Grassroots Bitcoin, which was for meetup organizers around the country, free event. And now we have an invite-only event in partnership with Human Rights Foundation called Global Bitcoin Summit, where we have community organizers from 55-plus countries. And that's all going on right now. And we sealed ourselves in the studio, and I got these two wonderful gents to join me, Sahil and Ty, while they're continuing content. And they're doing breakout rooms right now. I think Nifty is running a Bitcoin LARP. We just had these really cool presentations on. We're doing like this. We've been playing with this new format for the Global Bitcoin Summit, where it's different topics, and then on the topics, like the subject matter experts do 4-minute quick presentations. So, like, we just had a circular economies one, and representatives from circular economies around the world each do a 4-minute presentation of their circular economy, whether that's Bitcoin Akazi or Bitcoin Jungle. We just had Bob Space just presented. Piccolo from Bob Space just presented. It's super cool. And then we did the same idea with education best practices. And it was like 5 4-minute quick presentations. We did the same thing with global Bitcoin conferences. It's really fucking cool. And then we do like a breakout. Weird robot saying I sound super hungover, just slightly hungover, not super hungover. But yeah, it's been really great. And so many cool people. It's super bullish. Like these people are so impressive. Like, we all could do much better.
Not to pick favorites, but, what is the best circular economy?
I'm not going to pick favorites.
Which one is the most, were you like, oh, most impressed by?
What they're doing at Bitcoin Jungle is incredibly cool. That's... you know, we don't have a list, but it's
Bull
interesting.
Bitcoin launched there.
Yeah,
right?
We should have mentioned Bull Bitcoin.
Yeah, I was about to. But
Ninja'd you.
I mean, it's kind of cool, right? When you have like an expat like Francis who comes into a community, you're able to throw your weight around a lot more. You know, it's still very much a grassroots operation down there, but you're able to throw a little bit of gasoline on the fire.
Maybe there'll be a similar situation to El Salvador, where it started as a grassroots sort of thing, and then it becomes just takes over, and now it's like,
yeah,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, obviously the Bitcoin Beach guys are here. Like, that'll always have a special place in my heart. It's just really cool meeting all these people. Like, a lot of these people, like, I've known from the internet, but never actually got to shake their hands. I think there's maybe like 20 of the 100, no, like, yeah, maybe like 15, 20 of the 110 guests for Global Bitcoin Summit. It's like their first time in America.
Wow.
Maybe like 70 to 80, it's their first time in Nashville. So it's really fucking cool.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, a lot of cool people. I didn't specifically come here for the HRF event, but I've met a bunch of awesome people from around the world, just like hanging around the park. So, yeah, I mean, I can't speak to the content of the presentations and stuff. I mean, from what I understand and from what I've been hearing, like, everybody's super jazzed about being here. But, the quality of people here is just super high. And that's as per usual with all Bitcoin Park related events. Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. We've got a lot to cover this week. There's a lot going on, both inside the Bitcoin world and outside. Things are getting a bit chaotic. Let's start within Bitcoin. We've got Vivek here. A lot of drama with the latest ledger. What do they call themselves?
Donjon.
Hack. So is the cold card borked?
So,
disclaimer: CoinKite's a sponsor of the show.
Yeah. So first off, you know, the Ledger Dungeon guys—they do a lot of really good work. Appreciate all the resources they've put towards this. These sort of things help us make the products better for our users. So we're extremely grateful. With that said, you know, in the past, they have done attacks using laser techniques. These are very sophisticated attacks with maybe 500K plus or million-dollar lab equipment. And they've been able to mess with our secure elements. So in a recent one, they basically announced that they've done a similar laser attack for our second secure element. And that is the one that basically shows the trick pin slots. So this attack would show if there's trick pins in use.
But let's just pull it back for a second. Okay, so Ledger is a massive hardware wallet manufacturer, largest hardware wallet manufacturer in the space. They have Don John, which is essentially a pen testing research unit where they try and break all different devices in the space. They are the only lab that I'm aware of that successfully broke the MK3 in a demonstrated attack where they used, like you said, like they used like $500,000 laser. As a part of that coming out, when it came out, you know, maybe like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, was then the Mark IV got created. And the Mark IV added a second secure element instead of just Mark III had one secure element and one MCU. And the Mark IV has a second secure element, so two secure elements and the MCU. And where does the secure elements come into play? The idea of a secure element on the surface, high level, is you want to make it difficult for someone to extract the seed, the private key, from a hardware device. So the secure element is tasked with securing that secret. And in this case, this was their first attempt at trying to compromise the Mark IV. And my understanding is they compromised one of the two secure elements. And in order to steal a secret from the Mark IV, the way it's designed is you need to compromise the MCU, secure element one, and secure element two. Is that a good?
That is perfect. Yeah, that was well put. So basically, like the order, the process is the MCU authenticates itself with the secure element two, and that's to see if a trick pin was entered. And if it's a trick pin, then it'll continue to whatever was used there. And then if it's not, then it'll go with SE1 if the correct pin is entered. And then those are all basically done together with the public key and ECDH setup, where if you were trying to compromise the device and extract seeds, you would need to compromise all three because it's done in conjunction. They kind of do a handshake for decryption keys. So the drama arises from them putting this research out, and then as like saying this validates our model with the MCU, SE1 and SE2 working in conjunction with each other. But then they restated that it is a practical attack based on the previous research they did on the laser attacks on the old Mark III. So they're saying if you combine both these attacks, then it's a practical attack to extract a seed. However, they have not demonstrated this. And by them saying that, now some loud competitors and Twitter self-identified influencers and podcasters are stirring the pot.
Ouch. Is that all you think of us as? As influencers and podcasters?
It's not in your profile, so I'll leave that to you. If you want to add it, it's on you.
Okay. going back to the practicality of this attack, if we run with the assumption that combining the Mark III and the Mark IV attack that they just released, like, what is the actual practicality? Do you need $500,000 laser technology? And then how much time would it take?
So basically, you would need that lab equipment. You would need all this sophisticated knowledge of how to use that lab equipment. And you would have to probably run through a bunch of these chips, you know, in general, all working together. So you'd have to have like a lot of cold cards to test and actually do this through. So let's say like I go to Marty's house and actually get his cold car that he had funds on. Chances are I'll brick it. Like, it's very difficult.
Because wasn't there something like you took the cap off? They took the cap.
Decapping, yeah. They're laser decapping, yeah.
To compromise the secure element is not foolproof in itself. In the Mark III demo that they did, there's a lot of places it can go wrong. Obviously, once you add a second one that you have to compromise as well, it adds to that. This is probably why they haven't shown it in practice in the first place, because they weren't able to do it. And then second of all, like, after an attacker does that, they're shit out of luck if you have a passphrase or if it's a multi-sig key. So there is a little bit of, you know, they're a little bit dissuaded in that regard. And I think it's important for people to realize that there's no such thing as you know, perfect.
Unhackable. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything is trade-offs. It's trade-offs all the way down. And the cold card remains an extremely difficult device to compromise. And there's still to this day no proven extraction of those private keys from Mark IV.
And to your point, Matt, just even if you are really paranoid and you want to take it to the next level, multi-vendor, multi-sig kind of fixes a lot of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And like as more people use the multi-sig too, you have even the single sig users get this kind of protection by proxy, because like what you're going to spend $500,000 trying to compromise a device, potentially fail, take a lot of time doing it, and then it might not even be worth anything for you if it's just a multi-sig key.
Yep. I think that's very important to state in the sense of we need to think from perspective, not of things being unhackable, but it's like usually the attackers want the low hanging fruit, right? Whatever is the quickest, easiest. So just increasing the barrier to entry to attack this stuff, it does phenomenal in defending. It creates an asymmetry. And you have to think where, you know, are you going to have this $1 million lab to maybe steal what you think might be like 6.15 Bitcoin? Probably not, you know? And then as, of course, the market changes and it swings in this value of 6.15, because now Bitcoin's 250K is some outrageous amount, then yeah, maybe you need to increase your threat model and whatever thresholds to then do multi-vendor, multi-sig, like we're saying. And, you know, that's why we have like the tap signer too you could use with the cold card. And by all means, you know, I know there's a lot of vitriol, but I don't hate you if you have another device in your multi-vendor, multi-sig.
Use password too.
Hey, you probably want that too, multi-vendor, multi-sig, because then.
Yeah, but I mean,
you're not stuck with all the risk.
Like, you know, when you get complicated with your setups too, though, there's also like increasing chance of foot guns.
Yeah.
So
my favorite is actually CEDEX XOR, because you kind of bypass all this harder wallet, like descriptor issues and all that. I mean, it's good to have all whatnot, but it goes back to the simple aspect of just keeping BIP39 seed phrases on steel. And then, you know, basically have like 12 words at home, 12 words encrypted in a cloud somewhere, 12 words on another continent, and then having like different XORs of those thresholds and basically having your funds secure that way, where that final seed phrase you could input in anything that's BIP39 compatible. So it's almost back to the math and physics level of the bits instead of all this hardware wallet stuff. You have to worry about the foot guns and the bit rod and all that.
Just remember your seed phrase in your brain. That makes it the easiest. Don't even write it down.
Don't do that.
I'm kidding.
You will forget.
I saw American HODL tweeting earlier this week. It was a picture of a Trezor and then a seed plate next to it. He says, maybe one day, a couple decades from now, we'll look back on this practice of storing your Bitcoin as completely archaic and caveman-like. Like, hopefully.
There has to be a better way, but I'm not really sold on seedless. I know, like, Silo over there would be, it's good UX or whatnot, but no.
You're mocking me, but and I feel like, wouldn't Frost help with that?
He's about to do it. He's about to say it.
Yeah, I'm actually, like, wouldn't Frost
think
that swap out devices?
I think there's a great privilege among Bitcoiners today to shit on seed words. I think seed words are fucking awesome.
I do too.
Putting them on metal is, you put them on steel and you don't have to worry about fire. You don't have to worry about water. They're human readable. Like, there's some of us that have been around since before seed phrases existed. And it was so fucking difficult.
It was a scary time.
The digital backup problem is not an easy problem, and we've made it analog. And yes, there'll be different options for people, and people can take different trade-offs for what they want or whatever. But
another interesting
model on the like the metal plate seed thing. Like that's like, I mean, it takes some personal responsibility and some effort, but you have a fucking like Swiss bank that you have full control over. It's better than a Swiss bank.
I'm more bearish on humans and
you're bearish on humans.
I just like, yeah.
Is that why you live in Austin?
No. So you bring up Frostile and talk about like swapping out the share, but like all that NPC stuff is extremely complicated. There's a bunch of foot guns. We're still waiting on security proofs. Like it's like, you can't just like hand wave it all away.
Oh,
like,
true. I was more so thinking like 10 years from now. Like
that's fair.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I discussed this with Rob Hamilton when he was on the show last month. But that research that BitGo put out by using MuSig2 to put the random nonce generation verifier in a PSBT.
Yep.
That's a good step forward for MPC on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I think Brandon did that. It's interesting. I know some people are. I've been traveling, but I want to check it out and actually see if like you can use cold cards with it, because yeah, if you do PSBT, it should work. So I'm going to play with it. It seems like low-hanging fruit. But back to what we were saying, another interesting trade-off that I thought went in the other extreme, where it was like seed words are too digital, was the Codex 32 stuff, where you have like the paper computer, the arts and crafts thing you built yourself, where you generate your seed that way with like the dice rolls, and then you do Polstra's wheel. I think that's pretty cool for generating seed. However, these always come to the issue of how do you generate an address from that, and you kind of do need to have a computer. And even for like the seed XOR stuff, the last word, the checksum, you're gonna double SHA 256. So I wouldn't be able to do that by
hand. That's a lot of handwritten.
Yeah, exactly.
Seed words are too difficult. We should manually generate addresses by hand.
It's fun though. There's progress being made.
Yeah, I like how we have more choices, right? I think that's what's important. We're like, we can like punch back at each other. Right. Like Silo's gonna be like, "This is shit UX," and I'd be like, "I'm sovereign. I could be in like a Faraday cage aluminum foil underwear."
Sahil's like speaking for the normie users, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so I, you have no problem with using seed words.
Oh, none at all. But it's kind of, I mean, like Peter does a really good job of this too. I mean, you guys know like the whole what is an XPub thing. It's,
which Peter?
Oh, McCormick. Like he knows.
Oh, Pedro?
yeah. But I don't know. I think it's worth thinking about the other billions of people who, like, there's a lot of friction setting up seed words. I know it's been harder in the past, but I think going forward, things like what BitKey and all the Frost stuff is probably going to help, I feel like. Not today, maybe, but in 10 years, probably.
No, I agree with you. It'll be shorter than that. I'd put it at, like, 3 or 4. There's just going to be more interesting trade-offs.
Yeah, I just feel I sleep better at night having my seed words on metal. Like, it just feels like way more secure to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
Did you do the heat crush and corrosion test like Jameson too, Ty? Blowtorch and hydrochloric acid, sulfuric.
On that note, actually, one of the worst parts, at least from a privacy perspective on seed plates, is trying to destroy them afterwards if you have good ones. Because even if you don't have funds on it, your full transaction history can be looked up using them.
Seed XOR, Matt.
Multi-sig fixes this.
Well, it was no, the seed plate, it had like the individual letter tiles that you can put in. So like hypothetically, if you destroy.
Oh, with the slots.
If you move a wallet, you just take those letters out.
I'm talking about like the simple ones, like CoinKite cells with the dots on them.
Yeah, the like, marking. Yeah. Dots.
No. How you erase that is just punch
them
all.
I'm aware.
Yeah.
It's a long time. Like you punch all the square holes. I'm aware.
NVK, if you're listening, we need to invent like a punch all at once machine and sell that to them too.
Just like a big 12x12, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a 12x12. Yeah. It's like a little, it looks like an ammo carton. You just like.
This is now a product development podcast. You're making products on air.
That's what happens when you got a UX guy, a graphic design guy, a sales guy, and probably the best marketer, podcasters, and VCs.
So let's tie a knot on the bow. That is the, how do you say it again? Dungeon security test. It's going to be very expensive, probably impractical for most people. But if a motivated state actor with access to a shit ton of money and these facilities got this, they may be able to do it. Again, I don't think it's been made clear that they've actually extracted a private key.
There's a little bit of, you know, it's frustrating because Don John specifically has been a very good actor in the space. Mm-hmm. They have done things very responsible in the past, and it just feels like
saltiness after the
It was intentionally, it feels like it was intentionally misleading and fear-mongering about it. Like literally the whole reason the second secure element is there is to make this whole process that much more difficult, and they just completely disregarded that as an aspect. They're like, oh well, we could just repeat it, which is just like, I don't think that was said in good faith. But that all being said, like, that I wouldn't be surprised if we see an MK5 with three secure elements. And but like, if you take it to that extreme conclusion, right, it's like, what is Don John going to come out and compromise one secure element and then say, well, you could just repeat it for the three of them? Like, that would be, I feel like that would not be a good faith argument.
No.
And then on top of it, look, I love the Seed Signer project. I've used Trezors in the past. Like, you can't use, it doesn't logically flow to use concerns over compromising a secure element to advocate for hardware wallets that don't have secure elements in the first place.
I disagree. It's really wise to carry your Seed around in your pocket to upload into stateless devices anytime you need it.
It makes no logical sense that that argument would even follow in the first place. There's other reasons why you might want to use a Seed Signer or a Trezor, but the idea that hardware without a secure element fixes a potential secure element compromise is just in fucking insane logic. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's all we have to say about that.
I like virtual secure elements too. But yeah, we'll tie this knot now.
Not tied. Other big news of the week. Of course, it dropped after RHR last week. Ripple bought Fortress Trust. Became apparent that Fortress lost funds and was in need of a bailout. And the good, honest, ethical people at Ripple stepped in and purchased Fortress Trust to fill that hole. So now Ripple owns Fortress.
I tweeted it, and I'll say it again. Ripple beating SEC lawsuits and bailing out Bitcoiners was not on my 2023 bingo card.
Mark it down. Gentlemen, what are our thoughts on this?
I mean, it came out of nowhere. But you know what? It's not entirely surprising to me. It feels like a consequence of the world we live in that, you know, just like this sort of ridiculousness just happens. I don't know, man. I mean...
Well... So first of all, I don't think it came out of nowhere. At least the idea that Fortress Trust had a hole in it, I feel like didn't come out of nowhere. Prime Trust had a hole in it.
Yeah.
And the guy who founded Fortress Trust.
Yeah, but I mean the fact that Ripple comes in and, you know, like, picks this all up.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. First of all, I would like to add that I believe that Ripple is still doing due diligence. So there's a chance that Ripple doesn't actually close the deal.
We've seen it happen before with BitGo and other acquisitions.
Binance and FTX.
Yeah, exactly. Until the ink has settled on the draft purchase agreement, this is still in some VDR due diligence BS. And I wish them the best, but popcorn.
If you, If your house stinks so much that you fail Ripple due diligence, it's really fucking bad.
And then wouldn't it be shocking if that turns out to be the case.
Yeah, so anyway, the biggest implication for this for our audience is that Swan uses Fortress for their backend. So that goes to reason that Swan will be using Fortress owned by Ripple as their backend. They do that in partnership with BitGo. So customer funds, my understanding is customer funds are held at BitGo through Fortress.
Fortress owns the trust and then BitGo does the custody. That's the way I understand it.
One interesting thing I noticed is that I was talking to a few people here and just over the last week, there are a few other companies that also are in the situation. And it's interesting that some companies take heat and others don't.
Like using Fortress?
Yeah, like Prime/Fortress.
Okay.
And
what other companies? I think Fold does.
I think I know there's a couple others.
Strike's getting their own MTLs or something, right?
Strike is up there.
Strike has 49 MTLs. So that goes to, they have everything but New York. River has high 20s.
Unchained that, at like 48, thing. I think.
So like as part of this, the question is what happens next? Like what's the path forward? I mean, the Swan guys have been very outspoken against Ripple in the past. They've been very outspoken against many shitcoins in the past. And what is their path forward? So they announced this plan to like launch this Bitcoin only trust business with BitGo
yesterday.
And like it's easy to announce something like that, but the hardest part is the regulatory part. Like how, like it's going to take forever to get MTLs. Like it's going to take a long MTLs are money transmitter licenses. They need them in every single state they operate in. So easier said than done. You know, we'll watch it, and I hope for the best on that front. But
the easiest way would probably be like scat around for a trust and acquire it.
That's their plan. That's what they said in their press release, is that they plan first option is going to acquire a trust that'll already have these MTLs, and if not, make their own and then go get the MTLs.
I mean, this is a process they should have started years ago, for sure. But I'm glad that, you know, they're pursuing this path now. But as far as like Sahil, what you were saying before, why do some companies get heat and others not? I mean, look, Swan, I love, you know, we have a lot of friends who work at Swan, but they go hard at other, you know, like other companies. And shitcoiners in particular, but they go hard at them. So they kind of invite a lot of the heat, whereas like I don't see Fold doing that at all. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking. At least for me, that's not maybe my style to do that. And I feel like maybe others should just kind of focus on their own business maybe. I don't know.
I think particularly coming at other businesses without naming names that have chosen to go down a particular architecture path by building their own infrastructure and doing custody and exchange in the same spot and have worked really hard to do it the right way because they understand that Bitcoin custody is not easy, and allocating that to a third party based out of Las Vegas that doesn't really have experience with cryptographic material probably isn't best for their end customers.
You shouldn't be fudding companies that hold Bitcoin themselves when your infrastructure is owned by Ripple.
I like the way that you summarized it on Dispatch, Matt, where you said like the old way was, you know, the diversity or splitting up these responsibilities, but then the new Bitcoin model is you kind of want the most technical, most compliant, well, least compliant that passes the compliance tests. And the most competent, right? All in like one house that you like really trust. And you want these people to be the type of people like, oh, we got the knock on the door that we got subpoenaed. We have to give all this data, XPubs, everything. And they're just like, nah, fuck this. And they just burn the servers or something.
Trusted third parties are security holes. Yeah. that goes for users who shouldn't trust custodians and should hold their own keys, and trusted parties are security holes. And that goes for companies that have trusted third parties. Like if your users can get rugged by someone else, you are going to be in for a world of hurt. And I think it's prudent that both users and founders of companies try and reduce their exposure to trusted third parties as much as possible. This should not be a controversial thing.
I will say there might be one exception I can just think of recently to that idea of building everything yourself. And this might be on the list. I don't know if we have.
There is no list.
Okay, there's no list. I haven't looked into this specifically, but the whole nunchuck multi-sig as a service thing, I believe it's kind of in that vein of like, oh, you can use nunchuck to build your own collaborative custody. So maybe that's something Swan could do. Yeah.
I don't see how that connects to this particular topic.
Yeah. I love nunchuck, and I think their inheritance thing and like the other stuff that they're kicking off is pretty cool. I don't know if it solves like the Swan on ramp needs though.
Yeah, that's right. It wouldn't solve the Swan on ramp.
But that's like what they're trying to do with BitGo, right? It's like BitGo offers, multi-sig as a service for companies, and then companies can choose what key setup they want with BitGo. So they can be in a situation where BitGo can rug them, but it's insured, or they can be in a situation where BitGo and someone else can rug them if they collude together, or you could be in a situation where only you control the key quorum and BitGo maybe has one key so that they help you with operations, but they can't rug. So BitGo has all these different setups. And also just keep in mind, like BitGo is not a Bitcoin only business either. While we're there, they support a lot of shitcoins.
And have supported previous forks, yeah. And
literally attacked Bitcoin. Yeah. And how about the rewrite where Belshi tries to pretend he wasn't part of SegWit2x, even though he was like one of the top three guys. He literally wrote the letter that was like, we're calling it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Matt Corallo was on the show earlier this week. And he reminded me of that. Like Belshi sent out the letter. It was like, all right, this isn't going to work.
Those were good times. I remember like a tweet where like, Jameson said something against 2x or Bcash, and then Belshi like kind of said something back to him, and then Ben Davenport said something back to Belshi. Like that was such a interesting spot. And then I guess in that sense, like Mike was nice enough to allow people to speak their opinions. You know, we had many brilliant engineers that came out of BitGo, like Merch and Bosworth, also some sketchy ones like Ryan X Charles, but yeah, you know.
No, and I think let's give Belshi credit where credit's due. He did invent multisig.
Yeah. Like, or was it him, or was it like the Armory guys, or probably the same time?
I thought it was him.
Okay,
maybe BitGo had the first implementation of multisig. Gotcha, something like that.
I know they came up with the first implementation of multisig on Ethereum because Ethereum didn't have native multisig.
Yeah, and then Unchained was the first to have like an audited, secure Ethereum contract back when they did it with the lending stuff back in the day. Don't do it anymore.
God bless you, Parker.
That's Parker.
Yeah. Yeah, eliminate trusted third parties if you're an individual or a company. It does bring up an interesting point because going back to the idea that sort of bolting on fiat custody exchange practices onto Bitcoin is something we're just going to have to follow doesn't sit well with me either. Like, again, this is very unique. You want the most technically competent teams securing your Bitcoin, and that intellectual capital is very scarce right now.
The suits don't have a great track record securing Bitcoin, folks. No. Just like look at this cycle. You have many, many examples.
Yeah. And this is like a perfect example of like one of the areas of the industry where we should trailblaze and not bend the knee to the incumbent sort of regulatory compliance structure just because we want to fit in. It's like, no, we got to do this right or not do it at all.
Yeah.
Well, it's not
we're bringing new tech to the old paradigms, which is not right.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
It's high time preference versus low time preference thinking, right? It's having the right priorities in place and trying to build like long term for the future, rather than trying to get to market as quick as possible because you can trust third parties. Like that's what it really comes down to. Because there's nothing legally that stops these companies from owning their own infrastructure. It's all a question of cost and priorities and time.
Quickly back to BitGo and like the insurance coverage. That is extremely confusing to me. I don't understand how individual accounts or wallets are insured up to 250 million and how these companies stay solvent. Our buddy Rob at AnchorWatch has specifically tried to do insurance in the most legitimate possible way with it being Bitcoin denominated and like actually looking at the script, and that's why we're like Miniscript fans and whatnot. So I have a hard time like believing that, you know, everyone will get that payout instead of it being like 2 cents on the dollar. Maybe there's some clauses about like hot keys versus like cold keys and the API usage, but I'm just completely confused when they say it's like 250 million insurance coverage, contact us.
So first of all, I'm with you. Like insurance is very, insurance on Bitcoin losses is often very vague, and it's not clear how it works out in practice. And I just, you know, it doesn't really give me peace of mind. Like if you want insurance on your Bitcoin custody, like you should hold your own keys securely. But my understanding with BitGo is the insured product is the custodial product. Where BitGo has, like it might still be multi-sig, but it's like BitGo has the key quorum. So like BitGo is in complete control there.
Gotcha.
And if you want that, you have to go with that product. If you go with like their collaborative custody model where they only hold like one key and the quorum and they don't have actual ruggability, or if you totally own all your keys and you just use
coordination.
You know, like tooling, yeah,
like that's escrow, or
you don't get, I believe they do not offer insurance on that, but yeah,
gotcha.
Have the terms for the insurance product been like, are they available for people to?
I believe it's on the website. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I mean, in a lot of these companies will slap on like, yeah, all your stuff's insured, but I think Coinbase is a great example of this where, yep, people dug into the contract or like actually 2% of their hot wallet is insured. It's like
of the hot wallet. Yeah.
It's like, it's very hard, very early days.
Yeah, because I mean, and to be fair, like a lot of insurance companies like don't know how to price the risk and whatnot. So they don't want to do it. And there's a lot of room for insurance fraud to happen. But yeah, I would just, in general, count on not insurance. The reason I know about the BitGo, like different levels, was because I think it was like 2 years ago or 2 years ago, it came out that like the Salvadoran government was using BitGo. The argument was that they were using it
custodially or whatever.
Well, no. People were saying they weren't using it custodially, so BitGo couldn't rug. But then separately, they said the reason they were using BitGo is because it was insured. So it means they were using the custodial version.
Yeah.
The suits love insurance, for what it's worth.
Responsibility is hard, man. Convenience is where it's at.
Like, I think that was Saylor's argument, right, with MicroStrategy. One of his arguments for MicroStrategy's treasury that it needed to be an insured, regulated custodian.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's weird. Even like when I talk to core devs or other people like have been in the industry for a while, I think like once you've hodled like 4 to 5 figures worth of Bitcoin, you get really frightened about like how you are a target and like things that can be done to you. So I think that's why they want these sort of like collaborative custodies or just straight up custodians, so they don't have to worry about being, you know, kidnapped in foreign countries, things like that. Like, it's just peace of mind.
Wait, are you talking about individuals like high net worth?
whether it's individuals or it's like companies, you know, like the C-suite officers, things like that. Like, it's just a peace of mind. Like, you just don't want to be a target.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as like companies though, you know, in like, you know, outside of Bitcoin, like, having vendors take care of different aspects of your, you know, operations is a normal thing. So I guess like by default, they're like, oh, this is like a thing to do.
Like, yeah, but like Bitcoin's not a normal thing. Like, no. We've seen the issues with outsourcing your marketing email lists, right?
Where Well, I mean, we know that, but you know, people who come from traditional backgrounds, they will definitely not.
Yeah.
It's difficult because we've been programmed to like all these things because it's very convenient, but there's just foot guns everywhere.
Good UX.
Good UX.
You know what I'm getting out of this? There's a lot of opportunity.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of opportunity out there to make things better.
I mean, there is, but also, you know, there's a change that needs to happen, I think, culturally, where it's like people need to be comfortable with taking self-responsibility. And across the board, whether it's like individuals or companies, that just isn't the case, you know? So
the rugs will continue until personal responsibility improves.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, look, we can build these products and I think it's great. I think people should be building these products right now. But are they going to be popular right now? Probably not, just because people don't want to take responsibility. But with enough ruggings, I think that'll change.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's going to be a generational thing.
Oh yeah.
Like it could take two or three generations. If you think of the convenience that Gen Z is used to, even us as millennials that we're used to a certain extent. Like it's hard to rewire those brains once they've already been put in autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Kyle doesn't even trust himself behind the wheel of a car. He has computers.
Yet he trusts somebody, a car with no driver in it, which is scares the crap out of me.
They are so cool.
They're not.
I'm not paid by Cruise.
Sahil's like a big driverless car guy.
Hey, next time I see him, I'm going to like do the find my iPhone thing and I'm going to find out which Cruise he's in. I'm just going to put a bunch of cones around it.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that in SF. They cone the top of the sensors and then the car can't move.
It immobilizes them.
We're not that lame in Austin. We're not like Luddites in Austin, so people don't do that. But
not SF yet. I can imagine.
Hey, we're Luddites. We're just not commies.
Speaking of commies, I do want to bring up this clip because it is pretty crazy and indicative of the times that we're in the sense that we have insane governments that have really put people in precarious situations that are trying to blame capitalists for price increases, particularly in Canada. So Justin Trudeau gave a speech the other day. Logan's going to throw it up on the screen. And this is really dangerous rhetoric that's out there right now. And I do think it's important to bring it up and discuss it a bit. Turn it up, sir.
It's not okay that our biggest grocery stores are making record profits while Canadians are struggling to put food on the table. So Minister Champagne will be calling on the heads of large grocers to come to Ottawa with a plan to address the rising cost of food. And we expect to hear from them by Thanksgiving on what their plan is to stabilize prices. And it... And let me be very clear. If their plan doesn't provide real relief for the middle class and people working hard to join it, then we will take further action, and we are not ruling anything out, including tax measures.
Bunch of seals clapping in the background. I mean, this goes back to personal responsibility. That's why I wanted to bring it up now. It's because the Canadian government, particularly in... they're not alone in skirting responsibility. It certainly happens here in the United States as well, but they're completely ignoring their effect on prices. And Logan, if you pull that tweet back up, my reply to that tweet shows to help visualize this for people, like the expansion of the Canadian monetary base after 2020.
They're talking price controls, right? Is that what they
didn't say directly, but there.
Yeah. So it sounds
and
like.
And then when he said further action, does that mean what, like nationalization?
They're going to tax for profits. Oh. Come in. We're talking Canadian price controls here.
Okay.
That's Parker. HR. Parker's coming. We need
yeah,
to make
it. Day late.
Day late.
Day late, dollar short, RHR.
Yeah, we've got four Austinites.
Who's the Austin? Here.
Two of the Austin people are holding it down in Nashville.
What's up,
yeah,
Parker?
100% Austin soon when Matt Odell moves Austin.
You need to get in the camera, pick your mic up. Parker's coming in to say hi.
Where do you want me to? Here, hold on. I'm going to get in. I'm going to sit right between you.
Cool.
All right. Do we have another mic? We have a handheld. We should have a handheld somewhere.
Price controls don't work.
No, they never work, but it's crazy.
It's the money. I didn't know Canada had Thanksgiving. Is it the same time as us?
No, it's a different time. And I don't think they eat turkey either.
What do they eat? Like poutine?
Poutine.
Canadian Thanksgiving is an annual Canadian holiday and harvest festival held on the second Monday in October. So yeah, it's coming up within 3 weeks here.
You know, the war is not Austin versus Nashville. It's north of the river, south of the river in Austin.
No.
Sawhill is these still north of the river. I think I'm going to peg Odell for a south of the river guy when he comes, but we'll let him figure that out on his own time.
I said I'm south of the river, and Parker told me I live in San Antonio.
You're a little too far south.
Matt, you're not going to be able to hear them. Parker's just going to sit here and look pretty.
Do you not have headphones?
We can get another set of headphones. Logan's on it.
I mean, yeah. I don't know why you guys are so obsessed with competing with Nashville. It's not a competition.
He doesn't know why you're so obsessed with competing with Nashville. It's not a competition.
We all win together.
These guys are the ones who always punch. I only counterpunch.
He's only counterpunching. No, but going back to Justin Trudeau's comments on, I mean, he didn't say it explicitly, but it seems like if the grocery industry doesn't come together with a plan by the second Monday of October, that he's either going to tax the hell out of them or try to force them to hold prices at some level.
So it sounds like he's trying to make them starve in a year.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, this is like a Venezuela playbook, blame industry for the problems that the government created. And it's, again, very dangerous rhetoric, and this isn't the only topic on the subject that I wanted to bring up. There were some comments out of the UN, particularly around speech and what is acceptable and what is not, that is out there too. But let's focus on this Canadian situation.
Yeah. Well, so I'm wondering, like, what is the end goal of this, right? Because, you know, like, look, they're putting this rhetoric out there. I don't think they believe it because it's retarded, right? It's stupid. Like, on its face, they probably don't believe it. But what is their end goal? Is it to nationalize the grocery industry? To have more control over the food supply? Like, what is the end goal?
Wait, you don't think they actually believe that price caps work?
No, I don't think so.
There's some that do, though.
Well, right? Yeah. But I don't believe those who are putting forth the policy. Well, first of all, I don't think they're genuine in that they want to solve any sort of problem, right? So it's like, take that off the table.
It's got to just be like re-election, right? Re-election and then...
Is it though?
Funds and making
the way Canada works.
When is their election? Yeah.
There will be a forced election, I believe, in 2026. And the way Canadian politics works, from what I understand, is that you can call an election between the forced elections that happen, I believe, every 6 years or something like that.
Okay. 2026. I mean, if they implement price controls now, then it's going to be a fucking disaster by
2025.
Then.
2025. I'm being corrected by John Delaney.
Do you guys remember when in Venezuela the government took over? It was like a General Mills factory.
No.
Like General Mills left town. I think it was some cereal company. I can't remember. I think it was like whoever made Corn Flakes, and they're like, we can no longer operate in Venezuela. And then the government took it over, and there was this whole like dog and pony show about like the government running the cereal factory, and it like lasted like 60 days, and then they couldn't figure out how to do it anymore. You know, so it's like when the government starts talking about getting involved in like the grocery business, about telling grocers to do something or talking about taxes, or, you know, the latest stage communism is just like, we'll take over this highly complicated operation, and then it just ends up going out of business completely.
Well, I mean, in Venezuela, isn't it the same with oil? Like, they're such an oil rich nation, yet, you know, like, they should be killing it, but the you know, oil is nationalized there, so you know they're not making any money off of it where they should be.
But they're making a decent amount of money off of.
Yeah, but it's not filtering to the rest.
Yeah, I mean, they also have sanctions issues and whatnot. Like, we have seen cases where, at least in terms of energy production, authoritarian countries have been able to do like semi-vertical integration, like Saudi Arabia or something. The price controls, like, why do price controls not work? Is because the reason prices are going up is because the money is failing. The money is losing purchasing power. It's not because grocery stores are making a shit ton of money. That's the first lie. So these grocery stores are probably mostly struggling because if you're entering a recession and your business relies on consumer spending, you're going to have tighter margins. Particularly the smaller family-owned grocery stores and any kind of retail stores compared to the larger ones that are able to stomach some of these hits. So you put in price controls and you fuck over their business. You make their business unsustainable, unprofitable. And you basically, it goes down the line all the way to the suppliers that are supplying these stores. And you completely distort all the market forces that result in efficient supply chains. So you end up in a situation where the money's not going to stop dying. So the money continues to die. You put your stores out of business, and then you have massive shortages for the goods you need, because there's no financial incentive to actually deliver that supply to meet the demand. And it'll be a complete fucking disaster. And unfortunately, you know, at this point in our global fiat experiment, we will probably see many of these countries try and implement different levels of these price controls. I mean, I think Biden, when the gas prices were up like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, whenever, like, what did he say? He's like, the evil gas station owners like are taking all the money and we need to go after them. So like, I think this is going to be a common theme as money dies. And it's unfortunate, and we're going to be like watching it from the sidelines. Bitcoin fixes this long term, and free markets fix this long term, but it's going to be painful.
Mandibles.
There was always going to be a mandibles.
Someone took a shot somewhere.
But what was? Didn't they put like a price cap on, or the rest of the world tried to enforce a price cap on Russian oil?
It was like $80 a barrel or something like that. And India was like, "We'll pay more for that."
Yeah.
And then market forces.
Yeah. No, I mean, going back to the Venezuela example, pull up that page, Logan, because you can't put it up. Oh, it's weird that it's not working for you. I'll take a screenshot and put it in. But going back to that, the nationalization of the oil and gas market in Venezuela, the problem they had, like Parker said earlier, like the government gets in, they don't know how to actually run the thing because it takes a division of labor and people with particular expertise in oil and gas, petrochemical expertise. And Venezuela had this problem where their refineries were literally blowing up because the government didn't know how to maintain them. And so this is a chart of Venezuelan oil production going back to 2008. And as you can see, when the government took over, the production of one of the most oil-rich nations in the world fell dramatically. It's less than one-fifth of what it was.
Yeah, and there was certainly sanctions didn't help Venezuela, but they need technology from U.S. companies to import in, and you need a form of money that a company will accept outside your four walls. So it's not one single thing, but yeah, like it's like when money fails, your ability to produce things gets massively impaired to the point of functionally non-existent in most markets.
Yeah. And so with this Canadian situation, it gets bad up in Canada. Like Trudeau's pointing at the grocery industry right now and saying that, and that's the other thing, like diving into like the record profits. Why do they have record profits in nominal terms? Because they printed hundreds of billions of dollars out of nowhere over the last 3 years, which has flooded the economy with money. So yes, their revenues are going to go up because more people have more money to chase after these goods. And yes, nominally their profits will go up as well. And so it's again, a rhetorical sort of cop out by Trudeau here. And then that's not the only industry that's really having problems. I watched a documentary last week about the Canadian real estate market, and it's sort of baffling what's going on there. Like, they literally have an influx of migrant workers and immigrants for their tech sector and their financial sector, but they're not immigrating people that can actually build houses as well. So they have this supply-demand mismatch, which is sending Canadian real estate prices skyrocketing, which is being exacerbated by the monetary base expansion at the same time.
Yikes.
Wait, so they have low supply? Is that the that's the issue over there?
Low supply of housing, high supply of money.
And low-skilled labor or blue-collar construction workers, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and oil is ripping right now, too.
I mean, have you guys talked about the Krugman tweet from today already?
He tweeted today. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. We should pull that up.
All right, I'll find it.
Krugman's been on fire. But on the same line, he basically was like, if you remove food, energy, and shelter, it's very clear that inflation is going down.
That's good. That's pretty good.
Don't you love CPI? Like, you just like take out the things that are like bothering you, and it's like, oh, the number's good.
Hershey's chocolate's the same price. It's just the bar got a little smaller. That's it.
Yeah, is he like a triggering bot for Bitcoiners? I don't know.
Yeah,
you got that?
Yeah.
He's just trying to get as much blue check ad revenue as possible. What do you think the real inflation rate is in America right now, Parker, in your guess?
I would look at food and energy as like the greatest indicators. And, I don't think that you can look at it year over year because it is cumulative and it's eating into people's savings. So I would say food and energy have increased 30% to 50% from 2020, and that's the most significant part. I don't know. It's probably, year to year, 10%, up.
Which is material.
But you got to pull up his, can you actually read his tweet?
I'll read it. An inflation update. In the past, I focused on a measure that excludes lagging shelter and used cars, as well as food and energy, just to note that it adds to the evidence that inflation has been largely defeated.
Like this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like pissing on you and telling you it's raining. But like, just like the way that he talks about it, it's like, I've typically only looked at it excluding food and energy, which people need every single day. Like that, those are the two things that everybody needs every day to survive. You could basically go with everything without everything else. Like, you need healthcare, but if you want healthcare, you need food and energy. And so the fact that these people like strip out the thing that's most inelastic that everybody in the world needs, combined with the fact that, oh, now we're going to take shelter out of it, which I'm kind of surprised by that because shelter is probably the thing that the Fed can most control via interest rates because housing is most dependent on mortgage prices and they can bring down kind of in-place assets versus things that need to be produced. But, I think it's pretty comical. So it's not just Canada. Our politicians are just as bad. And Krugman is functionally a politician more so than he is a economist.
He's a blogger.
There's a great website. I think it's called Priced in Bitcoin or Priced in BTC or something. And there's a lot of charts of like you can segment it out by like price of beef and price of eggs and all these different,
like over time.
Oh, over time. And you can price in dollars. You can price in Bitcoin. So it's just a cool like.
Do you know what it uses as far
as data?
It's a good question. I don't know. I just kind of trusted the science, I guess.
It had good UX.
Didn't we just have a trusting third parties conversation?
So. It had good UX. Leave them alone. It was a pretty chart.
No, but I think this particular Trudeau press conference, the timing of it's interesting considering on the other side of the spectrum, you have Tucker Carlson going down, interviewing Javier Milei and the sort of advertisement of that discussion that was released last night was Tucker basically going in Argentina and explaining hyperinflation to people in real time in the process of him exchanging $100 for $100 worth of Argentine pesos. And it was literally like a duffel bag full of cash. And that's, I think that's the weird juncture that we find ourselves in. You have these governments that really back themselves in the corner in conjunction with their central banks, and they're losing control of the narrative and prices, and they're trying to fall back to the playbook of despots throughout history, particularly socialist despots in countries like Venezuela. And then you also have this theme growing and becoming more popular, where like the conversation of hyperinflation is beginning to pick up on the other side of the aisle. And it's like, how are we going to win the minds of people to understand that like what Trudeau is doing, what the US is effectively doing on another time scale as well, will lead us to a road of ruin. Like, we really need to understand how money affects our lives and how governments and central banks affect money.
It's very frightening.
Well, we're talking about this on the level of like a, you know, you just said like Canada and the US. I mean, I'm of the belief right now that we can't save everybody, right? Like, you know, Canada, that's completely like, look, I have a lot of Canadian friends. Good luck to you. You know, do your thing. For me, the US, like, huge country, you know, it's like, I can only have, you know, enough bandwidth to take care of my family, to take care of my friends, make sure everybody that is close to me within my like Dunbar number circle is doing well. And I think everybody should take that approach, because if you're like, oh, the US is, you know, like on the road to ruin, you know, it's not going to get better because you do XYZ, right? Like, you can only have control over your immediate surroundings. And I think if everybody takes that approach, cumulatively things will improve. But if your goal is to like, I'm going to fix the US, like, that's a losing proposition for, I think, most people.
I agree.
It's frightening that with the debasement of the dollar and the dollar still being like the world reserve currency, that we're destabilizing the other nations more than ourselves. And we're also feeling the pain. So I can't imagine what they're feeling with the energy issues, the costs. And then to back to Matt's point saying Bitcoin fixes this, I think like it ties into what Ty just said, where we do need to start doing like whatever circular economy stuff we can do, whether that's just Bitcoin or cash even, just so we have these supply chains set up when things get really squeezed.
100%. I mean, that's literally what this whole week at the park has been dedicated to.
Yeah, I think Parker's talk at BitBlock Boom was talking about that too. It's like, if you're setting up your Bitcoin payment processing when shit hits the fan, it's like you're way too late. So set it up now. Shout out to Zaprite.
Yeah, well, what Matt talks about is like, you should always be securing your Bitcoin for contemplating 10x the price. Like, whatever the price is now, you better secure your Bitcoin the way you would secure it if it was 10 times more valuable, because it will be in the future. And if you're trying to figure that out at the time when Bitcoin's going crazy, like, you're not going to be making as good of decisions. Kind of the same theme as in this, which is that, you know, the world's kind of crumbling. I think Ty's, you know, right in the sense of like, you got to control the things you can control. Mm-hmm. If more people focused and thought about their world that way, then that's really the only way out. It's the only thing that we can really control. And in this world, it's like, if your currency is hyperinflating and then you're like, shit, I need to figure out how to get my, you know, customers paying me in Bitcoin, you've definitely waited too late. And that there's this easy kind of default mechanism that's complacency amongst, you know, people in general, but it applies to Bitcoiners too, which is like, you know what, like, it's just easier to get the dollar payment and then I'll convert it to Bitcoin once it's gone through several banks, payment processors, you know, maybe, you know, held for 30 days, charged back. I'll get the fiat and then convert it to Bitcoin. But the reality is, now's the time to start focusing on being selfish. Like, that was part of the talk, which is like, be selfish, take care of you and your customers. And if you take care of you and your customers and you get your rail set up to be less exposed to the fragile fiat rails, like, that is part of controlling your own destiny. And Bitcoiners should be more focused on that today than they probably are. And I think it's less trying to, you know, kind of force a circular economy versus just protecting yourself. And protecting yourself means protecting yourself and your customers.
Yeah, and if enough people protect themselves over time, they'll all look up and be like, oh, the circular economy is here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do this. Yeah, it's very scary times. Again, going back to the rhetoric, and I wrote about this in the newsletter last night. It's not the exact same rhetoric, but it's very similar in the same vein, in the sense that you have these people in control that are losing control. And historically, when that happens, they clamp down with despotic reactions, and Trudeau potentially tax consequences, price controls, who knows what's going to happen. But similarly, a few months ago at the Nobel Prize summit in Washington, D.C., her name's Melissa Fleming, who is like the head of communications at the UN, gave a 10-minute speech, which not many people picked up until this week. But she was essentially saying, like, we need more censorship on the internet. Like, we need to hire trusted sources to vet information. What happened during COVID was complete BS. Like, the fact that Twitter was allowing misinformation to spread. She referenced the misinformation dozen by name. And it's all become very apparent that all that was bullshit. Like, the FBI that was embedded in Twitter's offices that was pushing a particular narrative was pushing lies and misinformation, if we're going to use their language. And the people that were spreading quote-unquote conspiracy theories were actually, well, not all of them, but a lot of them that were labeled as conspiracy theories turned out to be fact. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the UN and the powers that be at that level of the power structure do not like that they sort of have their nose being rubbed in shit by people who, like, were getting good information out there that went against the narrative, and they're trying to tighten that up. So you have, like, the censorship thing going on in parallel with this economic crisis that's developing globally. And then, again, bringing this back to, like, Javier Milei and the conversation going on there, I agree, Ty, Parker, everybody here, it said, like, protect yourself, protect your family, protect your community. But I do think there is value in having these broader conversations, and why I do find value in the fact that Tucker's going down to Argentina and highlighting the hyperinflation, how it happened there, having a conversation with somebody like Javier Milei, who knows if he's an asset. Vivek and I were talking before, but whatever, the conversation's getting out there. And something similar to that is what we're seeing in London right now with these quote unquote blade runners who are going around and tearing down these
surveillance,
these Orwellian cameras that are trying to find people for driving cars that were made before 2005, or diesel cars made before 2015, I think.
Right. But with, I think there's a difference between the two. I think the Blade Runner phenomenon is more along the lines of, like, what we're talking about, like, you know, your locality, do things within your control that affect you and the people around you personally. Javier Milei, I mean, look, I've known about him for a couple of years. I think, I don't think he's an asset, who knows, but I don't think he is. However, you know, as far as, like, politicians go, the best that he can do, I believe, is slow down the fall, right? He's not going to be the savior of Argentina. I don't think politicians will be the savior of anybody, right?
Agreed.
But he can run, like, a Ron Paul-esque campaign where it's like, you know, Ron Paul, his campaigns in 08 and 2012, like, that's what motivated me to, you know, look into Bitcoin. And in that way, like, look, if he became president, you know, he would be able to slow down possibly, you know, like, the expansion of the monetary base, blah, blah, blah. But I love Ron Paul, but I don't think he would have saved America, right? I think he would have just bought us more time. And Javier Milei, I think he can buy more time for people in Argentina while spreading this message of, like, oh, there's another way. Socialism isn't the way. There is another way. And get these ideas out to the masses via, you know, these interviews with, like, Tucker and stuff like that.
Did this guy Milei, did he mention Bitcoin in his interview?
I don't think so. I haven't seen any videos of people talking about it. So
no,
I don't think
but,
so.
But he's super friendly. Austrian. Yeah. He's an Austrian economist by trade. And then he became, like, some, like, I guess, like, television personality or whatever.
You're a comedian?
I don't know about that. He's a funny guy, though. Yeah, I think he has spoken about Bitcoin in the past in a positive light, but I don't think that's, like, a major part of his thing.
Yeah, see, I think, like, my view of it is that, like, even Ron Paul, it's like, it's kind of crazy because so many of you guys had gotten exposed to Bitcoin or, like, the ethos of it. Like, so many people have come from, like, the Ron Paul camp, but Ron Paul doesn't seem to grok Bitcoin. I don't think Rand Paul groks Bitcoin.
Yep.
So it's like, just because somebody, and I don't know a lot about this this guy running for president in Argentina, but just because they're Austrian or they're sound money maximalists, it's like if they can't see Bitcoin, because I do think, and I fully ascribe to the verify don't trust, so I'm not like putting all support behind this guy Bukele in El Salvador, but it's not like can somebody save somebody or not. It's kind of can somebody position a country on a right trajectory.
Yeah.
And if you are very forward with an open policy around Bitcoin, not just to accept it as a currency, but to encourage people in your country to learn about this thing, to use it, to educate, like that can have an impact, right? That can have an outsized impact. And so I think until one of these guys like Millet does something similar, like until the base of their platform is like, we're taking this country off of the fiat standard and we're putting it on a Bitcoin standard, it's kind of like you got to take everything with a grain of salt.
Okay. So, Parker, I love you. I'm going to disagree with you there. I think that, all right.
Flyer.
So, Ron Paul, he wants the state out of money entirely. So, you know, money being a private, he wants private money. So he's not going to have like a, like legal tender system. Like he would ideally, like there would not be like a legal tender system. Like it would just be market-based money. So in that way, you know, Bitcoin will win out in the end, right? If there's free competition for the best currency.
Yeah.
I believe Millet would probably agree with that as well.
Yeah, but this is kind of where I disagree with libertarians. Like at a certain point, you have to put forward what your choices or your solution. Because I think a lot of times libertarians talk about private monies and there should be a competition on the open market. But at a certain point, you have to, as a government, be like, we're going to tax in this currency. And we're going to, like, I know that there's a libertarian side that would say, like, get rid of all government. But I don't think Ron Paul himself has ever advocated for the abolishment of the U.S. government. And so him coming short of not grokking Bitcoin and recognizing that, yeah, we should support private monies and this is the private money that is the only viable solution. Until somebody kind of keys in on that, they're kind of like searching for answers, in my view, of like how they're actually going to solve all problems that extend or are derived from a broken money system.
I
politics sucks.
Politics thanks, Sahil. no, man. I mean, I do disagree. I think money's extremely important. Do you want the government to be involved in the most important thing in, like one of the most important things in a society, in the economy? Like that's government intervention within an economy. If the government has a say in what money is, right? Like, wouldn't that be interventionalism in the economy?
Yes.
I mean,
you don't think so?
Like, I mean, guys, we're talking about reality here. Like at a certain point, somebody has to say, we're going to accept this as good money. Is that interventionism or is that
recognition
that the market has evaluated everything else? And that's why I say like governments don't like tax things, or things are not valuable because they're taxed. The government taxes things that are valuable. So it will become obvious that Bitcoin is the best form of money and governments will adopt it because governments need money too. So like if we can't, and I don't think that Ron Paul's ever put this forward either, if we can accept that there's got to be some rule of law and you've got to coordinate some consensus about how people are going to abide by those things, then you need to fund your operations and you're ultimately going to have to accept a form of money. So, and if Bitcoin is the single money that the state can't control, then a government saying, I'm willing to adopt that form of money is itself putting, you know, like actively separating money and state. Like the government saying, I'm willing to accept Bitcoin is the government saying like, I'm not going to have a hand into how this money is going to be created and I'm willing to play by the same rules as everybody else.
Well, look, if a government exists and we have to have one, right? it needs to fund its operations. And look, if the government's like, hey, we want to accept Bitcoin for payments, you know, for tax payments or whatever, I mean, I think that's fine. But if the government is like, this is the money and you must use it and, you know, nothing else, I don't think that is good.
I agree with that. But then last thing I'm going to say, and I got to get out of here, is that like there's 19.4 million Bitcoin that are already in circulation. There's only ever going to be 21 million. What's the saying about the streets will be paved with gold? Like in the future, the streets will be paved with Bitcoin, and that the best way to get Bitcoin into your jurisdiction is to have a policy that creates certainty and that's friendly to Bitcoiners. Like yeah. that is going to be good for your long-term prospects. And the easiest way to get Bitcoin into your coffers are people saying like, I can take my Bitcoin from this country and move to that country because there's only 1.6 million more to come. And ultimately there's going to be, you know, jurisdiction hopping and regulatory arbitrages. And so I'm just saying that the countries that recognize that earliest on and like Venezuela or not Venezuela, El Salvador is one of those, you know, someone like the UAE who's mining Bitcoin is probably, you know, soon to be next, maybe. I'm just saying that it would be better for people if the government recognized that they should separate money and state. And the only way to do that is to adopt Bitcoin.
Separate money and state. Like, why do you need like an additional layer on top that says like, this is the thing? Why don't you just remove what's, you know, the friction right now, all the regulations, and then, you know, like people will come here because it's a Bitcoin friendly jurisdiction because there are no regulations around it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, say that it's a Bitcoin friendly regulation. Yes, Dan.
Wait, I don't want you to leave because it's a very enthralling conversation, but none of it matters. Stablecoins have supplanted Bitcoin as
wait. There's nothing more cringe. There's nothing more cringe than the use of the plural stables. Like, you know, stable coins are bad. They're like a worse. They're a worse form of fiat than like than PayPal. You know, like yeah. PayPal is actually decent, but then like
Clip
a
that.
Quote stable coin is just a worse version than a PayPal or a Venmo.
But it's faster.
But then the worst part is when these crypto VCs say the word stables, like stables are the future. You know, it's just like
they're not the future. They're now. They're beating Bitcoin,
but they're the future in their mind. They're the like I think I saw one slide that said stables are the killer app. Like there's so much wrong with that sentence. Like not just inaccurate, but then just like cringe around like stables are the killer app. Like it's just like there's so many cliches in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably talk about sats because sats are our stablecoin. So.
Are we losing the stablecoins though?
What does that mean?
It's because back to what I said about the world reserve currency, people still want dollars because dollars are actually becoming more powerful compared to their shitty currency. And it's very frustrating for us like that want Bitcoin adopted when these people still want dollars.
Yeah.
But to go back to this Argentinian politician that you guys all love.
I was the most reserved about this.
I'm not going to trust him, but I do think getting the message out there that like, hey, socialism's bad.
The awareness is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
As I was saying, his big claim, my understanding is that he wants dollars. He wants to use US dollars and he wants to move away from their own currency. And maybe there's some elements of like free market money competition there. But ultimately what he wants to do is formally dollarize the economy instead of just black market dollarize the economy, which is what's been happening just on the street. And so that goes hand in hand with what we've seen throughout the world, particularly in the developing countries, where there's a heavy demand for dollars. It's just mm-hmm. what exists. Mm-hmm. And traditional financial system does not support it because we have KYC, AML, tons of regulations. It just does not support it. So right now, what we're seeing is we're seeing essentially a bunch of different shadow banks, you know, operating these dollar pegged tokens to try and meet that demand. And they're making a decent amount of money off of it. But the long term, what we're going to see in the long term is to go back to the previous conversations, that trusted third parties are security holes. And these quote unquote stable coins. I actually prefer the term fiat coins because I think, you know, stable coins is almost a psyop of a name. It's like intentionally misleading.
Like renewable energy.
Yeah.
Look, they're going to be one of, like, when those rug pulls happen, as those rug pulls happen, I mean, we already saw one happen with Luna Terra. Like, they become the lesson of why Bitcoin is valuable, like why Bitcoin exists the way it exists, why we make the trade-offs we make. And you see, like, we've seen this for fucking years. It's like, Bitcoin is too volatile, but blockchain interests me, right? And, like, the whole reason we even have this native digital bearer token in Bitcoin is because you can't operate the system without trusted third parties unless you have this native free-floating bearer token that the market is pricing on demand. So I think stable, like in terms of time being more scarce than Bitcoin, dealing with these, you know, trying to build out systems along centralized fiat coin rails and whatnot is just a waste of time. Like, you're just wasting your time because it's not long-term. But I think it, you know, those rug pulls are going to be massive lessons to people, and it's going to suck watching it happen. It's going to suck watching, you know, people lose their livelihoods because they didn't understand the trade-offs they were making while they were holding them.
Aren't there more like semi-self-custodial ways, like DLC-ish type of things to get like stable?
There are, you still need like a price feed oracle and stuff for that. Like, it's like roundabout ways.
I think that's actually worse. Like, people that try to do like stable things on the Bitcoin, it's just like, just focus on the Bitcoin. Because I agree with Matt. And it's like, if we talked about this subject for 6 minutes, we've wasted an hour of our time talking about stable coins. Yeah. But going back to Matt's point, Matt, if this guy Millet wants to dollarize, isn't he a fiat maximalist?
Yeah, well, I thought he was an Austrian econ guy by trade. What happened?
Is he a fiat maximalist?
He's a politician, so he's automatically a sociopath too.
Yeah. Checks out.
Agreed. And to play devil's advocate here, is there a level of pragmatism where...
Well, yeah, absolutely. He's rails against the central bank. He wants to dissolve the central bank. That's a thing that he wants, and he says he's an anarcho-capitalist, which basically means like he doesn't want the government to be a thing, right? But like, you know, as like from like a praxis point of view, like you can't just go from Argentina to, you know, anarcho Argentina, yeah. Right? There has to be like steps in between. If he is legit, right? And I don't think he is. He's a politician. But if he is legit, he would not go from like 100 to zero. There would be steps along the way. I'm sure like he would have some kind of plan.
Right. And I'm sure, Matt, like if you talk to a lot of the human rights advocates here, I mean, we don't like dollars. We don't, a lot of us don't hold dollars, but they probably need dollars.
The demand is there.
Yeah, the demand is there. Goods, yeah.
You're blind if you don't see that the demand exists. Like this is organic demand just driven by, you know, millions of individuals that just want dollars.
The dollar is a safe bet, you know, it's like buying IBM or whatever for currencies.
Yeah, well, but going back to what you said, like everybody's currency is failing and they're all going to dollars. I mean, Matt and I, we've talked about this for years on the show. It does sort of validate the dollar milkshake theory that everything will fail into the dollar, then the dollar fails. Yeah. And it's trying to convince people and make them aware that the dollar is going to get rugged too at some point.
I'm not sure if that's the dollar milkshake theory, but
yes, it is.
I don't think so.
It is.
I don't think so, but
that's a dollar milkshake theory.
It's your dollar milkshake theory.
Everything fails.
But
into the dollar.
My point is, it's like no one is like, I'm not suggesting that somebody could just like, you know, close our eyes and the dollar goes away and we're all working on a Bitcoin center. It's not the way the world works. It's not realistic. But what I'm saying is that if this guy's idea is we're going to dollarize and the word Bitcoin is not side by side with it, he's fundamentally missing has a huge blind spot. It's like the dollar also is in the process of failing. Yes, it's the best of a weak lot. Strongest of a weak lot, but it has the same fundamental problems. And so if that's his position and he's just like, hey, we're going to dollarize, it's like, yeah, you can accept that the world is run on dollars today, but that if you're not also seeing that that is shifting and that is changing and that you're you know, not like taking a position like someone like Bukele, where El Salvador is also dollarized, right? And they are, you know, not just reading the tea leaves, they're saying, okay, the world's changing. And even though this was the best I could do, now I have something better. And I can't just get my economy off the drug, the dollar, that they're exporting inflation to me, but I can start. And so if you're not starting, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, like shutting down your own central bank and relying on another country's central bank is like outsourcing your Bitcoin infrastructure to Ripple.
Great. Yeah, that's the perfect example.
Yeah. I think we're all in agreement here.
No, we are.
I'm not sure we are.
I think we are.
I think we are. It's just, you know, we have slight disagreements on the margins, I think.
I think it's the order of events. Like, I think, Ty, you feel like it needs to rise up, and then Parker's basically saying that, but it will be recognized and make it easier to rise up.
Yeah. So I think bottom up is always the way that it should be. Like, you, I don't know. I mean,
grassroots.
Yeah. Grassroots.
Yeah. And I'm not saying anything different. I'm just saying, like, at a certain point in reality, you have to start saying, okay, I'm willing to accept this. It doesn't mean I'm not going to accept something else. It just means, like, I'm going to accept this.
Yeah. But I do think there are things playing in Bitcoin's favor. And we discussed this on the last trade yesterday with the head of research from Fidelity, is that we do have many examples of people being the first to walk through the door that have had success, whether it's El Salvador, their bonds are doing really well, MicroStrategy, their stock's doing really well. Paul Tudor Jones, like, he's up pretty significantly from when he first announced he got into Bitcoin. Like, there's a social, psychological aspect to this too, as more individuals, companies, countries see other people walking through the door and having success with their Bitcoin strategy. It will entice them to be more comfortable saying, hey, we're going to dollarize, but we're also going to play around with Bitcoin as well.
And Parker, to your point earlier about, you know, somebody like Malay or Ron Paul having a blind spot, I don't think it's a blind spot. I think it's an information gap. Like, they just don't, they aren't aware of the possibility, right? And
that's,
I think that people are going to tell that this, an
option. Thank you.
That's like semantics, bro. is that a blind spot? But it's like a gap in information.
A blind spot would be like he's presented with the information, but he's not like acknowledging it. The information gap is like he doesn't even know this thing exists, right? Like, this is not in the realm of possibility.
But Ron Paul spoke at Bitcoin 2021. This guy, he's Malay, also is like talking 90 about years Bitcoin. Old.
Let's give Ron Paul a break.
Okay, give him a break. But Malay, he's talked about Bitcoin. Okay. He's said that this is basically the solution to central banks. So he's aware of it. But then in terms of his policy, if his policy is to dollarize, like, what?
I don't know. I'm not him. I don't know his policies, and I don't speak
Spanish. He is not him.
He's not him. Maybe he's listening to this.
What do you think Dion thinks of Malay?
I don't know. I think Dion's very focused on what the University of Colorado football team is doing. I believe they're playing CSU this weekend, so he's focused on that game. I don't know. Who are you guys pointing at?
Beefsteak Josh is looking through the window.
Peeking through.
Nice.
He was eating a piece of bread or something. I don't know.
What?
Before we, since we have Vivek here, and since you mentioned censorship, which I do not think politicians will solve, I'm curious about, Vivek wanted, CoinKite released some information about the Sats link, which is supposed to be like this Noster capable hardware signing device. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, this is going to be a new device that has similar things to the Q1. So it'll have the QR scanner. It'll be NFC5 protocol compatible, like our Mark IVs. And then it will be able to be connected to Wi-Fi. It'll be like a peer-to-peer thing as well, and it's all ESP32 based. It'll have like GPIO pins. So we're curious to see what will be used, but MVK has been kind of teasing it out. I'm sure you saw like those purple PCBs that he's been uploading. And then, stay tuned. I think you'll see more teases coming out from some of our friends, but we'll leave it at that.
I can put like my NSEC on this thing and then just sign messages. Is that the idea, or?
I don't know this NASA stuff as much as you, maybe. I'm like Parker. Like, I'm on Domus, so I'm more than like Parker's involvement, but like at the same time, I can only do so much in a day.
Parker's bullish on Nostra now. He was telling me the other day.
Like, just there's so much misinformation out there.
I saw, like, Parker on Nostra, and then I realized it was like Rockstar or something.
It's like,
no, it's Parker, why don't you follow me back on Nostra?
Because Rockstar's apparently not controlling my account.
Yeah, don't you owe me a million sats, Parker?
This is a joke. Like,
bring on my money too.
Rockstar makes an account, takes a picture of me, and then everyone's like blowing up like, Parker's on Nostr. It's like, Bitcoiners are not skeptical enough, is what I learned through this whole episode. And no, I'm holding out to block height 1,050,000.
I have a question
at the earliest.
When the zaps were getting sent on Nostr, were they going into your Lightning wallet?
They were going into my Strike account. You want to hear some shit too?
So you were receiving zaps on your Nostr account.
I was receiving Bitcoin for something.
Got it.
Okay. But you guys want to, I was telling Marty this yesterday. Like, the people who send 100 sats, like, those people need to stop. Okay. Because
every sat counts.
It's a fraction of a penny. Okay. So to think about what a quarter of a penny is worth as the dollar's, falling apart. But like, literally people sent me like one sat, like 21 sats. Like, that's like a fifth of a quarter of a penny. Like, what are we doing here, guys?
Parker, one sat will buy you a candy bar in like a few years.
No, but like right now, it's like I'm having to think about like the mental cost of like, what, how is that?
So you're a Zabo acolyte?
I am.
I'm in the middle somewhere where I'm like, oh shit, like they're gonna spend so much on accounting trying to comply with whatever BS because it's all out of the open. And then also,
or you just make it easy, you just do it on a monthly basis and pick the highest price of that month and say, hey, here's my income.
Well, you got to track your zap still, and then yeah. I guess like the DB file like clogs up, right? So then you want to like flush it so the app's smooth again. I was talking to Tony about it last night, but it just seems very complicated. But I will say, the way they sell it, it's like to steel man them, is it's more powerful than a simple like, you know, it's, there's more skin in the game. But is like a fifth of a quarter of a penny the skin in the game? Then sure, I guess.
I send one sat when I want to insult somebody. I just send them one sat.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. True. I was having to add up to get to the dust limit. Okay. I was like, how many of you guys are, you know, like how many of you do I have to add up to get to dust? You know?
What is the dust limit? Is it still,
I think it's like 512.
500. Yeah. Something like that. I remember 300 and then like 500 or something.
I think it's 564.
Guys, zaps are good. Nostr is the future. I'm very excited.
Zap-Rite is better.
There's zaps and then there's Zap-Rite.
Correct.
I'm very excited about Satslink. Parker, when you want to send me the million sats, you can just go to my Nostr profile and you can zap me the million sats there instead of one sat.
I'm holding out. I've got all the time in the world. Block height 1,050,000. If Nostr is still around at block height 1,050,000, Matadel will give me a million sats and I'll hop on and start zapping people.
More than 100 at a time?
I bet you like
at least a penny. I'll guarantee I'll allocate that million sats at least more than a penny at a time.
Dude, I bet you 3 months ago that you would use Nostr in however many years, and it took you 3 months to have a Nostr account. I've seen Nostr on your phone. I know you're receiving sats to your own Lightning
wallet.
I'm
using Strike and some Bitcoiner. It'd be like if I put an address out somewhere on the internet and people just start paying it. Or really, it would be like somebody else put an address out and it wasn't even for me.
This kind of reminds me of the cop-out that Marty says he doesn't use TikTok because his intern posted TikTok.
Not the same. This was against my will.
Haven't done TikTok.
Wait, hold on.
Marty basically,
I got banned from TikTok pretty quickly.
Is hodling using?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you hodling then on Nostr?
No, I'm hodling on Strike.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can't even get it off because there's such small denominations that it would.
Well, it's Lightning though. It's apps.
You're getting into one of the beautiful parts of Nostr, which is like you actually don't hold Bitcoin on Nostr. You have an associated address that you attach.
It's LN URL, yeah.
Well, right, but it's like, so this is the thing. I think it's what it demonstrates is, and it's the same thing as Zaporite, that it's like anybody, like Bitcoin's interoperable. So I could put a Bitcoin address or an LN address on a website and somebody could come along and pay it, right? Doesn't mean that I'm on whatever tool they're using to pay me. They could be using a Blockstream wallet. I have no idea or care what they're using. They're just sending me some sats. And that's the beautiful thing about Bitcoin. So it's like just as much as I'm not quote on, you know, whatever wallet somebody's sending from to me, which isn't the case with like a Venmo. Someone wants to send me Venmo, they got to be on Venmo.
Actually be on it.
Or they have to send you Bitcoin from Venmo.
Paper Bitcoin or like whatever.
Venmo users can send money to Cash App users now because you can send.
Oh, they can?
Because you can send Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. This has been a great conversation. Can we wrap?
No, we've got another hour of bickering.
Yeah, Will Cole is just coming in right now.
All
right,
I'm going to step out. I'm going to let Will hop in if he wants to.
No, we'll wrap here. Any final thoughts from the representatives of this party rep?
Austin is dominating Nash on this podcast.
Sorry, Parker, final thoughts.
I don't have a good final thought.
That's, you can't show up and not have a final thought. This is poor form.
Sahil, final thoughts.
I love you all.
Come rock it.
Logan, what a legend. Thank you.
Thanks, Sahil. All right, final thoughts.
Control your own destiny and don't worry about national level things. Focus on the people around you.
Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love.